Welcome back. Hour two, Felger and Maz, live on New Year's Day. That's right. Do not adjust your radio. This is not a put-on. We are live and back on the air. It's been a while.
It's not a best of either.
Not a best of. It's not a syndicated program. This is Felger and Maz live in your face on New Year's Day. Coming to you from South Bend, Indiana. We're at a bar called O'Rourke's. It's right down the street from the Notre Dame Stadium where the Bruins take on the Blackhawks today in the Winter Classic.
I think the last time we were on the air was December 14th.
Yes, it's been a while. It's been a
Speak
while.
Speak for yourselves.
So, well, right, yeah, Murray, you were here more recently.
So it's a hockey day. And again, I'll just reset if you're just joining us. The Winter Classic in general, I'm still a buyer. I know you said it's lost its luster or it's lost its novelty. It sure has. I still think it's a good product. And I think Beer said it well. The New Year's Day afternoon, one-off, Winter Classic, great. The Stadium Series,
I couldn't give a rat's ass about the Stadium Series.
Right.
Oh, God, I hate it. Like, I hated it when they started the first. Like, that's exactly what you do is you dilute the product. If you have it just once a year, it sustains itself a little bit better. It's all about supply and demand always.
Yeah, I don't even like when they do the college games and stuff at Fenway. It feels like it dilutes it a bit.
Right. And it's not just that. I think that NBC does a great job. I think it's a good TV product. It's a great visual. You know, that's really why they do it. It's for the visual of it. And they do a great job dressing up the stadium. And, you know, it's going to look like there's snow on the field. There's not. It's been raining. But, you know, NBC puts a lot into just the way it looks. If you ever walked down, did you walk on the field at Gillette when it was there or Fenway?
I don't think I did.
I did at Fenway.
It's like, it is foam.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it is...
Styrofoam?
It's like a movie set.
Yeah.
You know, they import all this, and I don't even know what it is, whether it's foam or cotton or whatever, but... You know, they put a lot into dressing up the way it looks, and it works, because when it looks on TV, it looks beautiful. And the way the teams come out onto the ice are cool, and it's just a great visual. And I will also say, I like being in the stadium. I think it's cool. It's a sort of a celebration of the game, and it's not a great viewing experience. Like, I wouldn't want to play, you know, more than one a year, but for what it is, I think it works. I just think it flat out works. You know, you're going to have 20,000 Bruins fans Notre Dame Stadium today watching the Bruins. That's cool.
Yeah, I don't mind the aesthetics either. I hope the game's better than the last one they played in, because, boy, did they smell that day in the Canadian. Seriously. That was a wretched performance. But the speaking of this specific venue, like, I mean, I've been in this stadium before. I think you have too, right?
Sure, yeah, as a young kid.
So, you know, I was here as an adult, and this is one of the places in sports that when you walk in, you feel like you're stepping into a time machine.
Without question. So I've yet to go in it. I've been outside of it just to take, you know, photos with, you know, Touchdown Jesus and whatnot. And it's like if you've ever been to Lambeau, if you're out of town, you ever go to Fenway, you go to Wrigley for the first time, there are these places that you go to, and you, no matter how jaded you are, you walk in and you still feel like, ooh, like this is pretty cool. So and this is one of those spots.
You want to talk about the day, the game? Fine. You want to talk about the team? Fine. Jimmy, my call screen keeps going in and out. Do I have Ben on line one? Is that true?
You have nobody on the line.
Okay. Thank you. Again, six. I don't know why my call screen keeps showing up names and calls. 617-779-0985. We talked to Cam Neely earlier as well. So, I was going to replay one of those cuts. I want to hear it. I want to hear Cam again on McAvoy. Jimmy, can you get...
All set.
You know, because... He didn't really deny the stuff about him being late. Go ahead. McAvoy. Where do you stand on McAvoy?
Well, it's been a tough season for Charlie. I mean, actually, since he's been in the league, you know, it's been unfortunate. He's had the injuries that he's had. You know, we certainly, when he's in the lineup, he certainly improves our puck movement skills and our team on the back end. So we'd love to see him get healthy and stay in the lineup.
Is there any frustration there on your part with him in terms of... Is he doing everything he needs to do?
I believe so. I mean, I certainly haven't heard otherwise. I mean, I would be disappointed if he's not.
Well, a little thing came up recently where, you know, it's come out he's not exactly a timely professional. He misses buses. I mean, Marchand even said it in an interview. Has there been an issue with McAvoy off the ice with that, you know, just that little thing?
Well, I think one of those things where you got a young player that... stepped right into the pros, so to speak, from junior hockey, or pardon me, college hockey, has a lot to learn, and we've got a good veteran group that I think are pulling these guys along and making sure they understand what it takes to be a pro, and you know, Charlie has some things to learn, and you know, he's willing to learn. He's a good kid. He wants to be a really good player in this league, and and he's starting to figure out what it takes to be that player.
This is really what you're talking
about.
I mean,
totally. Again, he has every opportunity there to say, well, no, we've had no issue with him at all. He's on time. He's a professional. We get no, Charlie's committed. He didn't say that. And so, now look, the question to me is it consistent with the behavior of other young players at his stage, or is it worse and they see some sort of issue that, you know, requires him being sort of straightened out a little bit? The other thing is, you know, he makes reference to the veteran players. Feels to me like he likes the fact that Marchand called him out. Right? Like,
yeah, maybe so.
Yep, this is, you know, I know what he didn't say, well, I haven't heard what Brad said, or he knows what Marchand said, and he's probably happy about it.
So the thing is, though, is how lame is that, what he has to learn to be on time?
I know.
That is, come on.
Right, this is just a long way of saying he's kind of lazy. Like, he said he's a good kid. The veterans are there trying to keep him in line. Like, I hear that it just sounds like he's a little bit lazy.
But I'm sorry.
But you got to know better. You're a professional now.
He's not 7 years old.
Right.
You don't have to learn to be on time. You don't have to learn to be dialed. I mean, you should be. You're a professional making not tens of millions of dollars yet, but, you know.
And looked at as the franchise, you know, like going forward. This is.
Get up, show up on time, and put in the work. Like, so, I don't know. That is a concern for me with Charlie McAvoy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a basic one. Like, everyone else has got to be here at 2 o'clock. Be here at 2 o'clock. What's the problem?
I mean, what? You can't learn that at 19? You have to learn that? Jesus. So
I just hope he's not playing Fortnite or something.
I mean, right,
like
exactly.
That.
And then, you know, never mind the fact that he can't stay on the ice. Cannot stay on the ice. And he has these weird things where it's like, you know, again, he took the shot, it was 3 weeks, 2 weeks ago, December 22nd or whatever this is now, over a week ago. And he plays the next game and now he's out. It's like, huh? And it's an infection? Broke the skin, says Billy Jack. So then it was the concussion where, and I thought the Beers made a good point. The team did not call him out, but put it on him, saying, well, it's up to him when he's ready, and he still doesn't know the hit that he had concussed on. You sort of add on all these things. The heart problem, it's like, I'm starting to worry about the guy.
You should worry about it. Tell you, if even if there isn't a makeup thing there, what if he's just one of these guys that it's always something? I mean, he's had some weird stuff. That heart thing was weird. The concussion came out of nowhere. Like, there are just certain guys that can't stay out there. And what if he's one of those? Like, they can't afford to miss on him.
No, so all those young guys, you know, he's on that list of guys that have either flatlined or gone backwards. He's on it. And that's the guy they can least afford, because that's the most important guy in the entire team. So there's that. All right, again, we are here at South Bend, Indiana, at O'Rourke's. Get you ready for the Winter Classic here on 98.5. The Sports Hub. I still believe the Jacobs are going to join us. Jeremy and Charlie Jacobs are going to pile into the bar.
I'm sure they'll be happy to see us, too.
Think they'll want some of my mimosa? Have a mimosa with Jeremy Jacobs?
Felger and Maz are live at O'Rourke's Public House in South Bend.
Presented by Coors Light, official beer sponsor of the Winter Classic on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Harry in the car. What do you got for us on the Bruins, Harry?
Hey, when you see the Jacobs, could you ask them about when they pull the trigger on the trade? Because they have two goalies. They got all these small defensemen. When do they do that?
Okay. We'll ask them.
You'd be scared.
I don't know. I'm scared to ask some things. I'm not scared to ask that one.
I mean, to me, they have chips to make a deal. It is interesting to hear Neely say they want to protect that first-round pick in a perfect scenario. You know, that they would, if they could get a young player back with some term, then maybe they would move that pick. But otherwise, they clearly don't want to do that. Even so, between Krug and Grzelcyk, you have some replication there.
Absolutely.
And then all those left-shot forwards, you can move two. You can probably move two of those guys, for crying out loud.
You have two goalies.
You could move a goalie if you wanted to do that. So they have pieces to make a deal. And then on top of it, if you're going to make a big one, you include that first-round pick. So, like, I don't think there's any excuse for them not making a deal. And this team needs help. There's no two ways about it. And to me, they need to get somebody that can help them in the long term, too. Like, the idea of another Rick Nash, that does nothing for me. Zero. Because, to me, the Bruins have a longer-term problem there as much as they do a shorter-term problem. Like, that's got to be addressed.
No question. I'm also just concerned. I'm just curious. Do they start peeling some money off? I mean, Don't you think they'd love to trade David Backus if they could to get that money out of the books?
Absolutely.
You know, I wonder where they are on Krejci. It was good to see Krejci play well when he was with those guys, when he was with Marchand and Pastrnak. That sort of, I don't know, I think Krejci's been a little bit rejuvenated here in the last month. I don't know if you feel that. I feel like he's come back a little bit, but still, your highest paid player, hasn't been worth the money. Can you get someone to bite on David Krejci? This is what I talked to Beers about. You know, some sort of real, you know, roster altering kind of move. I think they're due for it. They're due for it. Appeal some money. And, you know, to me, I'd love to. How do you think they feel about Rask? I mean, don't you feel they're frustrated with Rask?
Yes. No question. Yeah, look, and I also think that, I mean, to me, if there's a right deal to be made with Rask, they'll make it. I don't see, at this stage, it doesn't feel like they're going out of their way to defend him or protect him. And then the other thing is, I keep coming back to Sweeney on all this stuff. It's fine to draft and develop all these guys. It's fine, okay? But at some point, you can't keep them all. So you've got to be able to, A, first of all, they have to be able to play. And then if they can, you can't keep them all. You have to be able to move some to fill your other needs because you're not going to draft and hit in every position. It's just not going to work that way. So now you're at a stage, time to move some. Make the right deal. Like, it's, you know, it's easy to just say, no, we're not going to make any moves. We're going to sign some free agents. We're going to draft, develop. At some point, you're going to have to make a trade.
Absolutely.
You just have to, at some point, you're going to have to deal from strength and surplus.
There's also, if you're them, do you account for, call it the Bergeron-Chara window? Like, how many years left do you have of Bergeron being at his level and Chara still being as good as he is?
I think two, maybe.
Maybe.
A couple, yeah.
This one and next? Maybe. I mean, Bergeron, I think, has got another, you know, 2-3 years in his prime.
Yeah, but with him, too, it's always something seemingly with an injury at this point, the last couple of seasons. So that's why I think it's two tops.
So do you try and, you know, do you manage it like that to accelerate it a little bit to make sure that you hit when those guys are still what they are? I mean, I don't know.
Well, to a degree, like, you know, you can't sell out. The window's too short. So it's like you can't load up and go for it and then leave yourself screwed. So to me, you got to approach it from a longer term than that. Because you still have to have pieces in place to play when Bergeron's going to deteriorate a little over time, I think. Chara could, like, be gone a year and a half. I mean, that could just be over and that's it, he's gone. So I feel like, you know, eventually Bergeron becomes a second-line center, even a third-line center. That's okay. As long as you have other guys here that can step up and fill in and replace them. All I'm saying is this. I don't load up for Bear. I don't think they can do it that way. But if these young guys can't play, I know I keep saying this. If these young guys can't play,
they're port.
They are completely screwed.
Port.
They are screwed.
No question. And add on McAvoy not getting on the ice. You know, that's part of that same story. But on Rask, I wondered. Jimmy, you got a cut from Cam Neely on Tuukka Rask where, you know, again, it felt like the old days. Cam doesn't really tell us something, but we just read between the lines.
We put it in the process.
Yeah, we put it in the Felger Maz take process. So here's Cam Neely on Tuukka Rask. Where do you stand on Rask? Give me your thoughts on him this year.
Well, Tuukka's been a little up and down for us, not as consistent as we would like and we expect from him. He knows that. He recognizes that. I thought he had a strong game in Buffalo, which we needed from him. But if, you know, he's got to decide if he's going to take the ball and run with it, so we'll see where he goes with that.
And him getting the start today, I mean, you can make the case that Halak's outplayed him this year, yet he gets the start today. I know that's Bruce's call, not yours, but is there something there with it's still your job, Tuukka? You know, is there a bigger message there? Because it's a big game, right? I mean, it's an important game for the guys.
It's an important game, and, it's, you know, obviously an outdoor game like this has more magnitude than a regular season game normally does. But, you know, we need Tuukka to step up and show that, you know, he can play a string of games and play well for us. He went on an amazing run last year. We're hoping for another one this year.
Okay, so the previous sort of comment, too, it's up to him to see if he wants to take the ball and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, that is like, we're waiting, Tuukka. You know, we're waiting.
Yeah, we need him to put together a string of games. Like, come on.
But I think that indicates that they're losing patience. When's it going to happen? We're halfway into the season. When's it going to happen? Tuukka, you know, we're trying here. We're giving you the chance. You're getting the game at Notre Dame. Like, let's go.
You know, and when I asked him about, you know, did he have a full support of the organization, we took that leave, and Cam said full support. I still wonder, because it's, you know, I still wonder. What Rask went through there and took those days off, is that, do other players deal with that on a regular basis? I get the sense they do. That, you know, he had a personal thing, but it wasn't, you know, a lot of guys have the same sort of situation, whatever he had, and they keep playing and they keep showing up. And he didn't, and I just wonder. I wonder if that's on the list.
So the way Neely said it, given what he was dealing with, made me say,
yeah, maybe.
You know, maybe, like, they deemed it serious.
Felger and Maz are live at O'Rourke's Public House in South Bend.
Presented by Coors Light, official beer sponsor of the Winter Classic. On 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Reyes and Revere, Ray, what do you got?
What about the wind factor? Wasn't it true the Bruins were trying to skate against the wind, and they looked like they were skating with cement in their skate?
Yeah, so Ray, what was the excuse in the second period, though?
The second period, you tired it out after the first period. I mean, have you ever tried skating or riding a bicycle against the wind?
Why should that matter? It's not like the
because
difference between...
Because one team is skating with the wind and the other team is trying to skate against the wind.
Against the wind. They got tired from skating into the wind? They were skating against the wind. That's what you're coming with? They lost the game because they were skating against the wind. That's your excuse? Hey, so Ray, when Tuukka Rask calls the loss embarrassing and when Claude Julien describes it the way he doesn't, well, then they're idiots too then, right?
That's right.
Okay, well, that's right. I forgot that you have all the answers on everything. That's right. I forgot.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Ray, I got news for you, pal. Stop making excuses. They got their asses kicked. They got their asses kicked. They didn't show up. They didn't show up. They got their asses kicked and they were undermanned. I'm not bringing up the wind.
What?
Keep going, Jimmy. Keep playing.
I'll tell you what, I still haven't forgiven them for that game.
Here's the best.
Watch a young man skating.
It's the best thing to come from that terrible game.
It's unbelievable. It doesn't end.
It's longer than the actual song.
Oh, no, tremendous. Hardy, that's an oldie but a goodie. And part of the thing of these games, you know, so the weather is mid-30s, overcast, looks like a good day. You know, one thing that does bug me about these games is you will get switching sides halfway through the third period because there's wind.
Right.
Or switching, you know, a 10-minute mark of a period because there's puddling on one side. Or they've had to do that from time to time. They've had games delayed because of glare, you know?
Oh, right, yeah.
Sure. Which doesn't look like we're going to have any of that today, which is good. But that does get annoying on these games.
So, look, I also think, though, there is a kind of a cool element to it. And we were talking about this on the way over here. I want to say it was like Pittsburgh and I can't remember.
Buffalo, the first one where there was snow.
In the snow?
Yeah.
And the puck was getting stuck in the snow?
Yeah.
I just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. Annoying as all hell.
Yeah.
But like, oh my gosh, look at that. They can't even pass the puck. It's getting caught in the snow. So, look, I like the aesthetics of it too. I do. And I'm not joking. That game at Gillette, three years ago now. That game, I will never forgive the Bruins for that. No, as much as it was a regular season game, that was one of the most wretched dog crap performances in Bruins history.
Thank you.
Boy, did that game suck. They were awful that day.
That was the classic Claude Julien wet fart Thursday night home game. That was...
Wow, was that bad.
And they did it on the highest rated day in hockey, you know?
My recollection is they couldn't get the puck. Remember, Montreal had the puck the whole game. It was unbelievable that the Bruins couldn't touch the puck in that game. And the other thing is, this popped into my head and I was saying during the break. Like, when I really think about it, why did they have the game there at all? Gillette Stadium, there's no history at Gillette Stadium in terms of, like...
Yeah, but Fenway had so many bad angles depending on where you were sitting, you couldn't do it there again.
So I know they wanted to host it a second time. I'm just saying that, honestly, Bruins shouldn't have been in it right away again. Like, you know, and I say right away, a matter of years. Gillette Stadium shouldn't be the venue there.
Can I tell you something, honestly?
You liked it.
I liked Gillette better than Fenway.
I did, too.
I thought it was a
better day. Way more.
It was a better day.
Oh, my God. The seat that I had at Fenway would have been perfect for a baseball game right behind home plate. I couldn't see a damn thing.
Oh, to me, it's about the building. Like, the fact that they're doing it here now, like, I say, okay, here you go. We're talking Notre Dame.
Okay,
like,
but
that's something.
But it's better in a football stadium. And we are now going to be joined here at O'Rourke's in South Bend by the owners of the Boston Bruins, Charlie Jacobs, Jeremy Jacobs, joining us here. As we're just getting set up. Charlie, how you doing?
Happy New Year. Real pleasure.
Jeremy.
Have a chip if you want.
Jeremy, how you doing? Happy New Year.
Are you guys buying?
Yes, we're buying, yes.
That's the only way we're getting out of here.
Chips on us. All right, so the Jacobs have just arrived. We were just talking about this event, Jeremy. Your thoughts on the Winter Classic as a product for the league?
I think it's a celebration of our sport. It's the right time of year. We own the day. Now the commissioner's done a great job in promoting it. And when we can take it around the country like this, I mean, this is a great spot for it.
Do you think it's softened at all? You know, the tickets are available today. You know, it's been a soft ticket market. Is that an indication that this has run its course or it's been oversaturated with the Stadium Series? Do you have any thoughts like that?
I wasn't aware that there was a lack of interest in it. I know we've held it around the country, like I say, and we're almost always sold out. I remember the first one in Buffalo was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that they sold 60,000, 70,000 tickets. And when we came to Boston, we certainly didn't have a surplus there. And I don't believe it would be soft here. I mean, this is Chicago. This is a tremendous hockey market.
You know, it used to be, and I don't know what it is now, but TV ratings. Didn't this game used to outrate a lot of the playoff games, you know, nationally?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't this one of the highest rated hockey games in the entire year?
Well, I think about it's not a highly competitive date, so to speak, in other sports. And I think we own this time. And it's been great for the sport, as I say. And it showcases us. And historically, they've been pretty darn interesting games, to be honest with you. I mean, it's interesting not just because of the game itself, but the environment that it's involved in. I mean, where have we ever taken a game and said we have to shoot out, put it at one end?
Right.
When have we ever stopped and changed four times instead of three times, you know, the direction we're going in? So it's interesting.
So you mentioned the venue, and you say it's a great venue for it. It's one of the most historic stadiums in America. Have you ever been in there?
Yeah. Have you?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Okay, now we both have.
You know, I'm just wondering if you've ever been in the stadium.
It's a classic stadium, and it's got its own mystique. It brings a different dimension to it. Let's play the game in there and see how it goes.
Jeremy Jacobs, Charlie Jacobs. Charlie, I'll ask you this one. Have you, as a franchise, started to bid on hosting another game? You talked to Cam about this earlier. Have you actively pursued the league about getting another game back in Boston? And is there anywhere you would play other than Fenway or Gillette? And if you could pick the venue, Fenway or Gillette, where would you have it?
Well, we've been campaigning. This is what, the 12th Winter Classic this year? I think it's a bias that we haven't been in all 12, frankly. This is our third one. Chicago's fourth. Love to have it back in Boston. I think the numbers financially were better at Gillette. I think the game itself, in terms of intimacy for the game and the fans, more particularly, was better at Fenway. So, with the fans in mind, I think it would be better to have it back downtown Boston. I know the our elected officials would love to see it back in the city itself as well. So, it's not really my call. That's the National Hockey League's, and this is really their event. We get to be the guest. As I said, I feel the bias.
Again, Charlie and Jeremy Jacobs, let's talk about your team. How do you feel about your team, Jeremy?
It's evolving. It's Let's face it, I haven't seen this many injuries ever in the history of I've only owned the team 40-some years, so I'm new to it. But I think we'll have a heck of a lot better second half of the year than we hit the first half. In spite of the injuries, we find ourselves in a pretty good position. And I think there's a lot of talent, unharvested talent there. Not just this year, but going forward. I like the way we built this team. I like the way Cam and the group have moved it forward. I like what Charlie's done with it. I look forward to a good future. I think we're in a good place. Of all the franchises I see around, I like mine.
What do you think, Charlie? Are you due for a big move? You know, we've talked a lot about the roster. Sweeney's been open about saying that he's been looking, and you look at the roster, it feels like there's some gaps there in the top six forward group for sure, third line center. What do you look at? Do you want to make a move? Do you feel you have to make a move?
You know, I think where I sit, my job is really to encourage and support Don and Cam. If they have a decision and they feel like they want to make the move, I'm all for it. I also, you know, listen, I wouldn't be out of context to share that we've had the discussions that we have this window with Patrice and with David and the centers and the players that we have, and it's not going to last forever. So, and we have a number of young kids that are coming up. I've got reports from the World Juniors in Western Canada. Just about, you know, we've got a player on just about every national team that's doing quite well. So, I think there's an opportunity there. It doesn't invite you, Michael. I'm not inviting you to get back on talk radio or get back to Boston and say, Charlie Jacobs said we need to make a trade. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I support whatever management decides to do, and we have had this context discussion about our window.
But you're conscious of Bergeron, Chara, that group.
They're part of our history. They're part of our of today's game. They're not tomorrow's game necessarily. Never had a GM or a coach that says, you know, one more. So bear that in mind. It's every year I've heard the same thing, but I think I've never seen a youth movement like we have today.
I mean, we were just discussing this a second ago, but realistically, when you look at that window, what are we talking about in terms of, we talking a couple of years? Do you look at it as a shorter window or a longer window? You're looking at it a couple or three or four?
I mean, what's your context for short, Tony?
Yeah. Well, is it a two-year window or is it a four-year window?
I don't know. I think, what are we? We're coming up on 1,000 games for Patrice. I mean, there's some tread on the tires, right? But that's not to disparage him at all. It's just
sure,
to say
what,
where he's at, and we feel like we don't have another 1,000. We know that, right?
Yeah.
Jeremy Jacobs, Charlie Jacobs joining us here on Felger and Mavs from South Bend, Indiana. Where we stand on salary and budget, do we have room to take on more money? Are you willing to take on more money for this year's team?
Money's not the issue here. That's been eliminated since the cap. I mean, we spend to the cap and figure every way around to spend more.
So it's always, you know, I always find that interesting because all of us Bruins fans, I personally, we've had a lot of back and forth on money and budget with your ownership, and I feel, you know, once you got the salary cap, you pretty much lived up to your word and spent to the cap for the most part. And that, you know, do you feel you've been vindicated on that? Because you used to say,
What do you mean the most part?
Yeah, what do you mean by the most part?
You've had some years where there's been a little bit of a gap.
We had a little room.
We had a little bit of room. Okay, but
what do we do with it? We usually spend it.
Well, for the most part. So do you feel vindicated that once you got your cap, you lived up to your word about spending?
I didn't feel vindicated. I think we've done the best we possibly can. There's never been a dollar number on that's made a difference.
You don't think in the past?
Before the cap?
Yeah.
Before the cap, we didn't spend crazy. You're right.
So, it's interesting. The cap has actually helped the Bruins because I think, I don't know. I just find it interesting. Once you got your cap, I feel like you lived up to your word about spending.
It's been competitive balance throughout the league. And you're seeing everybody spending pretty much to the cap.
So, how do you feel about the next CBA, and where do we stand with the players, and do you think things are on good footing, or is there going to be a problem here the next time around?
I hope not. I hope it goes forward. I mean, hey, let's face it. Everybody has flourished under the CBA as we have today. But, you know, I'm looking at it through my glasses. Somebody else might see it differently.
Thoughts about the stadium? Some big improvements here this year.
Yeah.
At the Garden, just some thoughts on
that. What was the impetus there, right?
Well, you know, if you think about the TD Garden, it's 24, 25 years there. So it needed an upgrade. And it's never really had a front door, for lack of a better term. You know, if you think about your way you've entered the guard, it's always been walking a block in, whether it's to the east or the west of the building.
Right.
Today you can actually use a front door, and it looks, I'm very proud of it. I'm fantastic. The experiences that both travelers, commuters, and event goers is drastically changed. And once it's done, once the actual development is complete by next November for phase one, it is going to be transformative, that entire area. Because in the north end, for the north end, for the west end, there's really going to be, I believe it's going to bring the two neighborhoods together.
So that front door, as you call it, was that specifically your idea?
No, my goodness. No, I couldn't take. No, that's a bunch of architects sitting around a room of brainstorming about how do we make this experience better. So we're expanding the TD Garden itself, the footprint for the bowl. We're actually adding seats inside the garden itself this summer. And we wanted an experience where people can sort of actually look into the building. As if you notice now, it's a glass curtain wall. You can actually see into the garden from North Station. We want people to be able to do that, to say, wow, I want to be in there. It looks like that's a pretty neat place to be, and it's coming to fruition.
What's your thought on the shelf life of the stadium? A lot of these new stadiums now, it feels like 30, 40 years, and they swap them out. They build new stadiums. You said now it's the 25th year, whatever it is?
Well, we opened in 95, so it's 24 years.
We haven't stopped building.
Right.
We haven't. I mean, think about it. Over the 25 years, this organization, we built the original garden. Yeah, or the new original garden. Right. And now he's been building since then. I mean, I don't know of another situation where we've spent more on redoing it than we did originally.
But obviously, this is you're thinking this is another 30, 40 years.
Well, yeah. You know, I tell you what, the mentality used to be, let's build a building, let's use it, and then 20, 30 years, we're done with it.
Right.
And that has not been our approach. Our approach is, let's build this building, and let's continue to develop it and reinvent itself. I mean, this is our... God, I've been here 13, no, I've been here more longer than that, 15, 16, but it's our third iteration of redoing all the premium seating. We're redoing every seat in the bowl this summer. I mean, it's really, it's reinvesting to make it a brand new experience.
Let me ask you guys one more, because I know you have to get going. Did you hear what the Dallas Stars CEO did last week?
Yes.
Which one? Lies? Which thing?
Yeah. Okay, well, just last week, he called reporters, Jeremy. He called reporters and said, why aren't you guys ripping Sagan and Jamie Benn? These guys have been effing horse bleep. Why are we struggling? It's pretty obvious. Our two best players. So the CEO called the reporter and absolutely blasted his players.
You'll be waiting a long time before we do that.
I was going to say, I'll give you my number and you can do that anytime you want. But how do you feel about that management style? Harry used to do things kind of like that.
Harry, I talked to Harry last night. He said he's not doing anything.
But what are your thoughts about that management style?
I think it's different. And if it's effective, I think everybody will get in line into it. But I don't think we need that kind of uproar in our locker room. Is not that locker room.
And then Jamie Benn's response is, I don't play for them. Meaning, I don't play for the CEO, I don't play for the owner, I play for the guys in the room.
Right.
How does that comment sit with you?
I think maybe he got done what he wanted to get done. You know, he got them binding together and saying, we're going to fight this ourselves. I mean, it may be smart. It may be a good way to do it. I'm going to watch it. If it works, we'll probably do it.
All right. I'll give you my number. Charlie,
we'll give you the specific studio. Guys, thanks for coming
by.
We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Quick break. Back with more. Felder Maz from South Bend.
Your Bruins Winter Classic Headquarters. O'Rourke's Public House in South Bend. Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
A lot of Bruins talk today, and I'll tell you that Buffalo win, huge, really important win for them.
Very important win.
They're about to lose. They were going down for three straight. That would have knocked them out of the playoffs, which is where they've ended up anyway, because other teams have won. But that was a huge... They were down 2-1. They get a late power play goal and win it in overtime with... What I thought, right, I was ready.
Did you hear those names that Judd Surratt was just throwing out there?
I was ready to throw stuff at the TV when I saw those guys on the ice.
Just about the worst overtime lineup. That overtime lineup was so bad, Claude Julien looked at it and said, what is he doing? That was a Claude Julien special. Three-man over, they just killed off a penalty. Grizzlick, Kevin Miller, and Sean Corrali. Never mind. It's
not exactly Bobby Orr and Paul Coffey.
Oh, my God. So usually it's two forward and one D. That's how most teams play that. They went two D and one forward, and the one forward is Sean freaking Corrali, and the one of their D is Kevin Miller.
When I saw that, I said, you've got to be kidding me. Honest to God. My wife actually sat down for the overtime next to me. I said, can you believe this guy's got these three clowns on the ice? Like, they got a minute to go. In overtime, it doesn't matter if the other team scores. You'll get your point. You have to score to get the second point in the overtime. If it's the end of regulation, you want to play for the tie, I half get it. But in the overtime, you got to score. And Kevin Miller's on the ice with Corrali and Grizzlick?
And what do you know?
I said, you got to be kidding me. Well, you know what happened?
They scored.
Yeah, Maz, what do you know?
That's why Butch is the coach.
A lot of people did the same thing. Corrali was definitely skating to the bench. He was skating to come off, and they waved him back on the ice. And Kevin Miller was trying to get off, too, as you hear on the call. And they wait. So Cassie put him out there just for the D-zone faceoff. All right, so, and he wanted to get the puck and then get two different guys on, but he said, just stay out there. And I think Cassie's done a hell of a job.
Oh, he really has. I mean, and again, I appreciate how candid he is. I find that unbelievably refreshing. He's not afraid to push buttons, and it doesn't seem like the players get irritated by it. So whatever communication's taking place on the inside is very good, because it's spelled out to all of them before he says it publicly or vice versa, you know, whatever it is. Like, there's no misinterpreting what he's saying. He's very clear to all of them what the expectations are.
All right, so we've talked to Neely, we've talked to Jeremy Jacobs, we've talked to Charlie Jacobs. You have a takeaway after talking to these guys today, Mass?
They're going to make a trade. Yep, they're going to make a trade. And to me, the sealer is Charlie Jacobs, and I don't want to, like, you know, put words entirely in his mouth. But
no, process it.
Well, okay, so let's put it in the Felger Mass processor. When Charlie Jacobs says, well, you know, we're at a stage now. You got a window here with Bergeron and Chara, and I think they brought that up before we did. And he talks about Bergeron and says he's played 1,000 games in his career. That's a lot of tread on the tires. We know for sure we're not going to get another 1,000. Like, I hear that, and I go, they're at that point. And I think for Sweeney, this is where he is now. He invested all this energy into the player development operation. Now you're at a stage, it's got to pay off. You've got to make a move.
And you know also what Charlie said. He said, you watch the junior, or one of the guys here said, you watch the junior tournament, and we've got players on every squad. And it was, someone sent me a, look up, Russia beat Canada, I think last night.
Yeah.
It's junior tournament. Watch the second Russian goal. This kid skated circles through the entire Canadian team. He's a Bruins draft pick. He's like a seventh round draft pick from Russia. And, well, I mean, maybe that's what they're referring to. So they've got Stanika on Canada. They've got a lot of these guys in the junior tournament, which are the cream of the crop. And so I think Charlie Jacobs is sort of implying there, we have assets to deal.
It's time.
We have chips.
Yep, it's time. I just think they've reached a stage here. It's kind of at a critical mass. You've got replication in certain areas. You've got a lot of left shot forwards. You got other guys still in the system. It's time to, you know, you should have a pretty good idea now who can play and who can't. And so you need help. It's time to make a move. It's time.
All right, folks, you want to weigh in. We got your thoughts on the Winter Classic overall, the day, the game, all of that. The team, they're sort of interesting spot. I think for the most part they've hung in well this year, and I'm pleased with the way they've played for the most part. I think the roster is lacking. And so now what do you do? And do you do something to maximize the Chara, Bergeron window, as these guys sort of imply? We can talk about that. There are some things that are bugging me. It bugs me that Tuukka Rask is getting the start today. I don't think he's earned it. And I think they've done a good job of pushing Rask and holding him accountable this entire year. And I would have gone Halak today. Not the end of the world, but I just sort of bugs me that Halak's not in net. I think he deserves it. He's earned the spot. I'm getting super concerned about Charlie McAvoy. Freaking guy can't stay on the ice. Can't get on the ice. And Cam Neely, when we talked to him, you know, did not deny that Charlie's learning some things from a professional side, showing up late, meetings, planes, things like this. Bad sign, scary sign for me with Charlie McAvoy, because I think he's the most important guy on the team. It's the most important guy on the entire team and the entire organization. Because Maz has been saying, if the young players can't play, they're porked. And if McAvoy can't play or stay on the ice, they're porked. So I'm starting to get worried about Charlie McAvoy.
Felger and Maz.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah.
Sports in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Sports.
Felger and Maz.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Do you want to make a move? Do you feel you have to make a move?
You know, I think where I sit, my job is really to encourage and support Don and Cam. If they have a decision and they feel like they want to make the move, I'm all for it. I also, you know, listen, I wouldn't be out of context to share that we've had the discussions that we have this window with Patrice and with David and the centers and the players that we have, and it's not going to last forever. So, and we have a number of young kids that are coming up. I've got reports from the World Juniors in Western Canada. Just about, you know, we've got a player on just about every national team that's doing quite well. So, I think there's an opportunity there. It doesn't invite you, Michael. I'm not inviting you to get back on talk radio when we get back to Boston and say, Charlie Jacobs said we need to make a trade. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I support whatever management decides to do, and we have had this context discussion about our window.
But you're conscious of Bergeron, Chara, that group. So that's a comment Maz was talking about. Do you think they're making a move?
I do. I think they're going to make one, yeah. And my guess is that they're in agreement on it. I can't imagine that Sweeney looks at this whole thing and says, oh, no, we're going to keep everything intact. I just can't imagine, because we all feel it. I just think that I thought they were at this stage at the end of last year, going into the season, that they're, okay, it's time. You've got all these kids now right there on the cusp. You know, Donato had just gotten there. Like, all of it. You have them all there, and you have, I thought they were going to move Krug before the season, but they're at that stage. Like, I think this is sort of the make-or-break time of the Sweeney era, if that's what you want to call it, at least in the short term.
So you don't agree with the tenets of Alex Spears' column in the Globe last week? Did you read this?
I did, yeah. And you sent it along.
So
go ahead.
Yeah, Alex Spear, you know, ran some numbers through the supercomputer, which he likes to do. And says, statistically speaking...
Oh, boy.
Statistically speaking, Murray...
Well, the math shows...
The Bruins profile to be a team that could go all the way. Which is just, I think, insane.
Well, they have a very high quality.
But, I mean, he doesn't go really high-level stat on you. I mean, basically. And so this is it's a little dated. This is from last week. So this is not updated with the last couple of games. But this is what he wrote right around Christmas. I think the day after Christmas. He says, the Bruins have the statistical look of a potential Stanley Cup champion.
Champion? Jeez.
I mean, good God. He says, on first glance, that suggestion seems ridiculous.
Yep.
Yes, it does.
I agree. Ridiculous.
Armed with 44 points, a mark that ranks 10th in the NHL, Boston has done little to suggest that they are an elite team. Yet, in comparison to eventual Stanley Cup winners through the same point over the last 10 years, the Bruins' strengths align relatively closely with teams that did emerge atop the NHL summit. And their deficiencies are likewise in line with recent champions. Okay? And what do you... So, for example, they're 44 points entering the Christmas break. That's the average through the same point of the season of the last 9 teams to win the Stanley Cup. So, all right. I get that.
The Bruins have the statistical look of a potential Stanley Cup champion.
I mean, okay.
So who else has 44 points? Like, that team's the same thing.
Right, exactly.
Like, so, you know, it's just, it doesn't, to me, it's about distinguishing yourself from the group, but go ahead.
Well, but, and there's one thing about having 44 points at Christmas with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, you know, Phil Kessel, Chris Letang, and that group. And having 44 points at Christmas with...
Anders Bjork.
Right, Jacob Forsbacka Carlson. Like, come on, man.
The suggestion seems ridiculous.
He writes that their average goal differential of .22 per game, which is 11th in the NHL, is unexceptional, but again, not far off from other recent cup winners that were at .43. Goal differential.
So I look at that and I say, no, that's a big difference.
That is. That's double.
That's a huge difference. Like, you know, the if you were to look at Tampa Bay, for example, Tampa Bay, I think
they're a wagon.
31-7. Okay, they're 31-7, and their goal differential is +51, right? Which for hockey is huge. Like, they win on average by 2 goals a game or a goal and a half. Like, that's a lot, for crying out loud. So, but he's trying to say that .22 and .43 are close.
He says
I'm disappointed in Alex.
He says the team's...
I thought he was a smarter guy than that.
The team's Corsi 4 percentage,
oh,
Murray.
Great. Here we go.
You got this. The Corsi 4 percentage.
52%.
52%, almost exactly in line with the average 5-on-5 mark of recent Stanley Cup champions. Suck on that.
Screw your Corsi.
Yay!
So he says if the Bruins rank near the bottom of the league in any of those categories, it might serve as a red flag. In recent past, teams haven't sniffed titles when they get off to essentially disqualifying first half starts. So that, I'll just translate. If you fall too far out of it, you're done. So that's true. That is absolutely true. We've seen that in the league. It is really hard to make up ground as you go on. You know, the standings are what they are on Thanksgiving, and they sort of stay that way. So that's absolutely true. So the Bruins, and I'll say this, did not play themselves out of it. And they could have.
They could have. Given the injuries, they could have.
They could have played themselves right out of it, and they didn't. And I'll spare you some of the other numbers. But what he basically says is, yes, the Bruins offensively are at the bottom of the league. They are among the worst goal-scoring teams in the league. They're averaging 2.8 goals per game. That's in the bottom 30% in the league. Yet, he says, there's recent Stanley Cup winners that didn't score at all. He points to last year's Capitals and the Penguins 2 years ago as not being high-scoring teams. Again, is that... Would you put those things in the same boat?
No, not even right. Because the talent level on both those teams.
Yeah, he's not considering the rosters. Like, this is what makes this so annoying.
So you average, 2.8 goals a game with Alex Ovechkin, Nick Backstrom, TJ Oshie, you know, all this great talent that maybe he's not playing well. Or you average 2.8 goals a game with Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, Letang. Or do you average it with Corrali, freaking Forsbacka, Carlson, and Dottenheim?
Yeah, totally different.
The team's Corsi for percentage of 52.0% is almost exactly in line with the average 5-on-5 mark of recent Stanley Cup champions.
Exactly. Like, and the other thing is, you know, in the case of the Capitals, you're talking about a veteran team there, right? And you're comparing regular season numbers. So you're telling me that the Capitals were looking at the regular season with the same level of desperation as some of these young guys on the Bruins? No way. The Capitals are going through the motions.
And you saw it last year.
They elevated in the spring. They started playing at their talent level.
No, you saw in the playoffs what the Bruins were. You know, and you look at these numbers last year, they probably looked like, they really looked like a statistical winner last year. And they got in the playoffs. And then everyone elevated, and they no longer had the advantage of playing harder than the other opponent on a given night. They ran into a team that was much better, and it was over in five games. And that's, you know, that's really what the roster is right now. They're really in the same boat. They are.
They got suffocated last spring. Suffocated.
You know, he points out that the defense and the goals against numbers are elite and truly in line with cup winners. That'll give them. Like, that I would, if you said to me, defensively, are they Stanley Cup caliber? I'd say maybe. I mean, I don't love their roster back there. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. You know, I think Cassie Ginn is a great coach, and I think they've done – the goaltending's been there, both guys, really. And Chara still has enough in the tank that he makes a difference, and I think that
– you know, comparatively speaking, I think they've been pretty good throughout the league. Good. Is there anyone that has true elite defense? Not really.
No, I feel like Carlo's coming in the right direction.
By the way, I'm glad you mentioned that. I thought Carlo was terrific in Buffalo.
Yeah, he's really he's you know, and it feels like his game's growing, right? They get him involved a little more offensively.
Absolutely.
So he feels like he's coming forward again, which is a good sign.
So, for the first time in a long time, we're talking about trades and things they need to do. You're not looking at defensemen, really. I mean, you're looking at forwards. Because that's a bigger need. It's just, boy, they got to get McAvoy, man. McAvoy has to come back.
I mean, that's a huge one. Really, it's a huge one. Because it's all really built around him. Like, you know, there's a mid-first round pick that they hit on. Right? They had the 13, 14, 15 that year in 2015. They get to Prescott out of it. But the flip side is I think McAvoy was 13, if I remember right. And so same part of the draft, and they hit. And now you're going to hit, and then all of a sudden something goes wrong with the guy? Because the talent's there with McAvoy. We all know that. And he's tough. I mean, or he plays physically. The toughness thing, maybe we don't know yet. But he's not afraid to play physically. He's not a finesse defenseman either. And so you're going to hit on that, have that kind of player, and then something go wrong?
Oh, it'd
be devastating.
All right, we talked to Cam Neely earlier. Jimmy, why don't we hear another one of those cuts? Neely earlier. You say something on the state of the team or maybe trade deadline related. Neely joined us earlier in the first hour of the program. Here's Cam on that.
Well, I knew based on the games last night that we had an opportunity if the other teams won that we'd be out, and here we are. So, but we're still in it. I mean, obviously with a win today, we tie with Buffalo. So, you know, it's one of those things where every point matters, and you know, we had a we didn't play well before the break. We didn't play well right after the break. We got it going again a little bit in Buffalo. We came back for the first time in a long time in that game. So hopefully that gives us some confidence. You know, we've got areas that we need to improve, whether it's internally or externally. We know that. You know, but the health has certainly been an issue all season, and we're starting to get healthier finally.
Okay, again, he mentions the externally. Again, he brought that up, and they've been very upfront about that. They know they have to do something on the roster.
I just can't imagine they get to this stage and not, you know, whenever you build it in any sport, you're going to get to a certain point where you got to make a decision and go forward or not. And to me, it just feels like they are now at this stage where they have to invest. And by that, I mean, you know, assess what you have, take some of those assets and pile them into something bigger. And I just don't see, if they don't make a deal at this, you know, deadline, I'd go so far as to say that's borderline negligent. When you're talking about the kind of roster you have with Bergeron and Chara, and you're going to get to this stage and you're just going to leave those guys hanging? They got to. My guess is the rest of the league knows it, so they're just going to have to wait for the right deal at the right time, but they have to make a move.
Your Bruins Winter Classic Headquarters, O'Rourke's Public House in South Bend. It's Felger and Mass, presented by Coors Light on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Where do you stand on Rask? Give me your thoughts on him this year.
Well, Tuukka's been a little up and down for us, not as consistent as we would like and we expect from him. He knows that. He recognizes that. I thought he had a strong game in Buffalo, which we needed from him. But if, you know, he's got to decide if he's going to take the ball and run with it. So we'll see where he goes with that.
And him getting the start today. I mean, you can make the case that Halak's outplayed him this year. Yet he gets the start today. I know that's Bruce's call, not yours. But is there something there with it's still your job, Tuukka? You know, is there a bigger message there? Because it's a big game, right? I mean, it's an important game for the guys.
It's an important game. And, it's, you know, obviously a outdoor game like this has more magnitude than a regular season game normally does. But, you know, we need Tuukka to step up and show that, you know, he can play a string of games and play well for us. He went on an amazing run last year. We're hoping for another one this year.
All right, again, Neely on Tuukka Rask earlier. I think Halak should be starting this one. But be that as it may, they're still waiting on Rask.
I mean, that line, he's got to decide if he's going to take the ball and run with it.
It almost feels like a test, too, because he refers to this game as a game of this magnitude, and it is. You know, technically, it's just a regular season game, but the Winter Classic is a bigger event. So maybe that's what this is. Cassidy looks at it as like, okay, like, let's see how you perform in this one, and if he craps his pants again, then okay, we're going to be riding Halak.
I guess they mentioned, or some, you know, maybe Beers or someone.
It was Beers.
Rask struggles outside? He doesn't like playing outside?
Oh, no. Beers said this is a big game for Rask.
Oh.
And I thought that was an interesting, because we're in the middle of the regular season, right? Like, you know, on the one hand, you say, what do you mean big game for him? But in the context of the goalie, I think he's right. And then you hear Cam say the way he says it. They start him here. And who do we have on first today? That was who said that Rask is poorly in cold weather.
It was Cam. Cam was first.
So it was Cam.
Well, whoever.
Whatever.
Someone said it.
But in any case.
It doesn't matter.
Like, the idea.
Yeah, you had too much sweet tooth.
Yeah, oh, by the way, I'll get to you later, Murray, about that. Thank you. Again, Jesus.
You could say no.
Oh, my God.
But they clearly are reaching the point. Like, they're looking at it, and they're saying about Rask, look, we're halfway through the season here. When are we going to get him? When are you going to get locked in? When are you going to get into a rhythm and start playing? When? Like, I think there's a level of impatience there with them. You can see it starting to bubble up where they're saying, okay, you know, let's go. You've got to decide. You're going to take it and run with it. Let's go.
So we got to read between the lines with Cam. We have to sort of put it through the processor a little bit to get the messaging. It is too bad we don't have that Dallas Stars CEO. Did you read the story?
Oh, my gosh.
This is so great.
This is awesome.
I mean, so, I mentioned it to Jeremy Jacobs. But the Dallas Stars CEO called beat reporters and said, why aren't you guys writing about Sagan and Ben and how badly they've sucked? He says, they've been effing horse bleep.
That's so a great line.
You ask why we're struggling? It's pretty obvious. Our two best players aren't performing. How come no one's writing it? Which is like, God bless you. You know, and those writers there in Dallas, like, get off your ass. But how about that one? How about the CEO calling the writers to say, you got to get on these guys. They've been effing horse poop.
I mean, I honestly don't think it's unprecedented. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's happened before, but not in this era. Like, you don't see it in this day and age anymore. Like, you know, to me, that reeks of something George Steinbrenner would have done in his day.
Or Harry. Harry
had a
few.
Harry's even better one.
Yeah.
Like, but that's that kind of thing. That's old school. That's like, why don't you guys get off your ass and start ripping our million-dollar guy, you know? Or, like, to me, the comments are off the charts. And the players, you know, sort of like, oh, really? I didn't know he felt that way.
Well, no, that's what Sagan said. Ben said, well, it doesn't matter because I don't play for him. Which, that sort of bugs me. And dude, they're paying you, and I'm not sure exactly what his salary is, but $7 million a year, he's like that kind of player. What do you mean you don't play?
You do. He's one of your bosses.
You don't have a boss?
Right.
You a-hole? Like, I hated that comment.
Yeah, you should hate that comment.
You have a boss like everybody else. Like everybody does. No, you play for someone else. You do. You also play for your teammates, and that's most important to you, and I get all that. But don't act like you don't have a boss. God.
You know, and look, obviously, you know, selfishly, I have more of an interest in the Sagan part of the story than the Ben part of the story. They just gave him a huge contract.
Yes, they did.
Huge. 8 years, 78 or something like that, right? They give him this massive contract. And then he goes out and starts going through the motions. Oh, you dog. That is the worst of the worst. Like, if you are an owner or an executive on a team, you invest in a guy at 8 years, you know, you give him that kind of big contract, and then he starts mailing it in or going through the motions, oh, you have a right to be pissed. I'd be pissed, too.
Yeah, I hated that comment. I hated it. You do owe the organization something, for sure. So, too bad we don't have that, but, you know, be that as it may. All right, your final thoughts here, the last 5 minutes as we head into the pregame show. That last Winter Classic game that they had at Gillette, what year was that, Miss?
2016.
16.
So that was the year they missed the playoffs.
Correct.
Yes.
They missed the playoffs. So,
yeah, that was the Tuukka needing the plug, and he bailed out of that last game against Ottawa, right? That was the last
was
game.
That, was oh, that yeah. season. But
what a stink bomb that game
and
was.
That game.
Oh, it was awful.
And it really did. It set the tone for the whole second half of the year, and they never really recovered. Never really a playoff team. So, I mean, I don't know if there's a parallel there to be drawn. I think it's a different team, different kind of team. But if the playoffs began tonight, they're out.
So, look, these guys get some grit. Like, you know, I don't think it's a question of effort or anything like that. You know, it feels to me like on most nights they try. I just don't know how good they are, at least some of the forwards in terms of goal scoring. But this is a game. They should win this game.
They should. Chicago's one of the worst teams in the league, somehow. I don't know how, but they're one of the worst teams in the league.
I mean, this now, look, I suppose there are some variables with the you know, the magnitude of the event, if that's what you believe in, and so you never know what. Maybe the Blackhawks have one of their better games of the year. But the Bruins really should win this game. This not should be a game that they lose.
And while they're out of the playoffs right this second, if they win, I think they go to third place and they knock Buffalo out.
I mean, there's a bunch of teams that they're all like 2 points apart.
I'm telling you. They want that. You should want to be the third place team in the division. I'll take Toronto again. Toronto's better than you, but I don't know if they know how to win yet. And I still...
And the goalie's an idiot.
Their defense and goaltending is still, you know, I still don't think it's there. As good as their forward group is, I think that Toronto series is another competitive series. If you get Tampa in the first round...
Forget it.
See you later.
Yeah, they're gonna get destroyed.
Or Washington.
Yeah, okay, so you try and cut it close with that second wild card, thinking you play better, you're better off in that Metro division. I don't know. You want Pittsburgh or Washington or a team like that?
No.
You want Toronto again. You want Toronto, and so... I look at the standings, like I look at everything. Like I look at the Celtics and their standings, and, you know, Felger Maz will be back on the air tomorrow, and we'll get to everything else. So it'll be a re-entry Wednesday tomorrow. We'll get to the Celtics and their loss last night and the Patriots and all that stuff. But
yeah, you missed some doozy stories the last couple of weeks. Josh Gordon, do you want to crow about that? Caw, caw!
I'm sorry, who?
Josh Gordon.
What happened? Did I miss something?
Oh, you're like,
oh, you're saying he didn't make? Oh, he failed a drug test or left. Oh, he's not on the team. Oh, who could have predicted that? Huh. Really? Interesting. Josh Gordon didn't make it.
It's like I could hear you all the way from Florida when that story broke.
I forgot all about that. No, I wasn't going to mention that. We'll do that tomorrow. But, you know, this is a hugely rated game. This is the most watched hockey game of the year just about until you get to the Stanley Cup Finals. They're right on the cusp. So don't do what you did 3 years ago with that abomination at Gillette Stadium.
I mean, again, I still haven't forgotten it. Like that is.
Oh, it just felt like a complete waste of time.
It was a waste of time. That's because it was. It was a complete waste of time. They didn't show up. You talk about, as you say, a wet fart kind of game.
Oh my God.
It was
that whole first period. They were in there. They were in their own zone. They couldn't clear the puck time and again. Like you mentioned earlier, Montreal had the puck the whole game. I remember I was on the other end. I'm like, hello, like I can't even see anything. Goal after goal. It was just a disaster.
And look, as we all know, over decades, the Bruins have reinvented ways to lose. Right? Like they've done it a million times. That game against the Canadiens in the Winter Classic 3 years ago. That game might have been the worst performance I've ever seen from the Bruins. It was that bad. And I don't think that's hyperbole. They sucked that day. Jesus, were they bad.
Okay. Hey, just real quick, from an aesthetic value, do you like the uniforms?
Yes. Sure. I do. I do like them. You?
I'm into the Bruins. I hate the Blackhawks ones.
I don't like the Blackhawks
ones
either.
So good point. I'm with you. They're black, right?
Yeah. There's not an ounce of red that you can see. I mean, I think of the Chicago Blackhawks. There should be red in that uniform somewhere. Nothing. Just all black. Ugh.
No, the Bruins are good. And if you if you have the TV on or when you get home, if you're driving around right now and you go watch it, you'll see. It really is a good setting. I'm looking forward to going in to just that it. These games are better in football stadiums than baseball stadiums. They just are.
Definitely.
As cool as it is to be at Wrigley or Fenway, it's just better served in a football stadium. It is.
I just didn't like Gillette. I just don't see anything special about Gillette.
There isn't anything special about Gillette.
That's all.
You know.
So I mean, to this place, like I'm into this. Notre Dame, you know? Notre Dame. This is one of the most historic football stadiums in America. Like, this is good.
Think they serve mimosas over there? Or do I have to go back to beer?
If not, I have my pen.
Oh, good, Murray. Yeah, that's the last thing I need. This guy.
He's not talking about the kind of pen you write with.
Okay, folks, enjoy the game. Dunkin' Donuts pregame comes your way right now. Then we have the call here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz return after 4 o'clock hour. We'll go over the game and get you back home until 6 o'clock. Enjoy the afternoon, everybody. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you later.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.